Cantor Audio, a division of Recorded Books, presents Cornbread and Crossroads by Bella Falls, narrated by Johanna Parker. Chapter 1. A deafening crash jolted me out of sleep. I bolted upright in bed, holding my hand over my heart to keep it from jumping out of my body. My mind struggled out of my sleepy fog, wavering between my fading dream and reality. A slight breeze blew the gauzy curtain back from the window, revealing an almost full moon glowing in the dark sky, and a beam of moonlight filtered through the gap in my curtains onto my quilt. I crossed off the option of a wild storm causing the terrible noise and held my breath, tense as I listened for the slightest sound in the nighttime stillness. Another couple of loud bumps set my teeth on edge. The noise was definitely coming from somewhere inside my house. I picked up my spell phone from my bedside table to text Beau and make sure he wasn't entertaining a lady friend and making an unnecessary racket while wooing her. Pixie poop, I'd forgotten to plug in the charger before falling asleep, making it totally useless. Climbing out of bed, I crept to the door and placed my ear against it. The heavy thud of my worried heartbeat was hard to ignore, but I strained to interpret any other sounds from the other side. My imagination went into overdrive. Maybe that scraping noise I could hear was someone dragging a body across the wooden floors downstairs. Glass shattered from somewhere below. Was someone breaking into one of Uncle Tipper's old curio cabinets that still held some of his prized possessions? With shaky fingers, I turned the knob on the door with caution until the latch unhooked. As a last-second measure, I fumbled in the dark and grabbed some unknown object off my dresser, raising it in the air to strike any intruder who dared to bust into my place. The door opened just a crack, and something small rubbed against my leg as it burst into my room. It took all my strength and my hand over my mouth to hold in a scared squeal until the tiny creature leaped on top of my bed and mewed at me. "Peaches!" I scolded in a low voice. "Little girl, you nearly gave me a heart attack. You best be glad I didn't hex your little behind to kingdom come." She cocked her head to the side and meowed in response. "No, I will not scratch your head, not unless you can tell me who was making that noise." The little fuzz bucket licked her paw in indifference, circled three times, and settled at the foot of my bed. "Fat lot of good you are as a guard cat," I whispered, gathering my wits about me and making my way into the hall. The other side of the house on the second floor was pitch black. Either Beau was in for the night, or he hadn't made it home yet from one of his many dates. But a dim light emanated from downstairs, and upset voices echoed up the stairway. Based on the high-pitched tones of the argument, I guessed whatever was going on involved a few of my recent house guests. I flicked on the light so I wouldn't trip and fall down the stairs, and made my way to the general kerfuffle. After sticking my head into the formal parlor and making sure nothing was truly broken, I followed the din until I stood in the doorway of the small kitchen at the back of the house. Two pixies were holding on to either side of a glass pie plate while floating in the air. They dodged a third companion, who dive-bombed them in an attempt to steal the prize away. Underneath the three, a brownie wrung her hands and reached up to rescue the dish.
"Don't!"
she admonished, jumping as high as she could, but missing as the pixies pulled their prize out of reach.
"That pie belongs to Miss Charlie, and if you don't stop, she'll kick us all out."
The little minx, who had been trying to take the pie dish away from the other two, stopped mid-air and placed his hands on his hips before fussing at the small fay underneath him in a shrill shout. When he finished, he stuck his tongue out at her and resumed chasing the plate. He misjudged the angle of his attack, and the other two pixies didn't react fast enough. The glass plate flew out of their hands, flipped in the air, and crashed onto the ground, joining the broken shards of a lasagna dish. Before the brownie could scold them, I cleared my throat, causing them to freeze where they were. "Be careful, Bee. Don't cut your feet on the broken glass." It took me a second to take in the whole mess of my kitchen. A cutting board full of chopped vegetables covered the small table I usually ate at, with the discards lying on the floor underneath. A couple of drawers were pulled out, with various contents scattered on the floor, and a wisp of black smoke rose from my oven.
Ignoring my instructions, the brownie rushed over and, using some oven mitts she'd found in one of the drawers, opened the door and retrieved a blackened hunk of what must have been food at some point.
"I'm so sorry, Miss Charlie. This was supposed to be a surprise for you in the morning, but those three ruined everything."
She glared at the three pixies still hovering, their tiny wings creating a slight buzz. As soon as the accusation left Bee's lips, the other three exploded into piercing protests, pointing at her and each other. I'd never understood the language of the pixies, and the middle of the night was not the time to start learning. I held up my hand to stop everyone from shouting and pinched the bridge of my nose in frustration. Ever since we'd returned from Charleston, several of their local magical folks had taken us up on our invitation to come live in Honeysuckle Hollow. We thought at the time that only a few would take us up on our offer. Instead, our small, supernatural southern town had become the hub for many disenfranchised or mistreated fae. With exponential growth came a lack of housing. Like me, several Honeysuckle residents volunteered to accept temporary boarders. David, the half-brownie, half-dryad, who'd helped us solve a murder and prove my grandmother's innocence in Charleston, was staying with Mason. Since I had a bigger place, I offered to house more than most. Beyond the four in the kitchen, I had at least three others supposed to move in with me sometime over the next week. Taking a deep breath, I attempted to speak. Before I uttered one word, Bee slammed the casserole dish down on top of the stove and wagged a finger at the other three.
"I told them that they shouldn't eat your food unless they were willing to replace it with something else, like I was doing. And that pie especially was yours, and not for them, because it's your favorite. Plus, it came from your boyfriend."
I had told Bee about my history and preference for chess pie after Mason brought one over to help bolster me for the challenges he knew were coming. Perhaps I'd been too naive in thinking nothing would really change when I opened my home to the guests. Right now, I could have used a big fat piece of the pie to curb my current nighttime annoyance. "It's fine," I reassured her, attempting to smile at the pixies. "But I'd appreciate it if you would take more care when trying to eat or make food, and try not to make as much mess, or at least clean it up. Also, I'd appreciate it if we kept the noise level or any ruckus to a minimum." One of the pixies zipped over to Bee and whispered in her ear. The brownie's expression of anger softened.
"Nug is asking what you're going to do to them."
I blinked twice in confusion. "I don't understand."
"I think they're worried that you would use that in order to cast a spell of punishment or something on them."
Bee pointed at the object I still gripped in my left hand. Looking down, I noticed the hairbrush I'd grabbed in my sleepy panic.
I'm not planning on doing anything to them. I just want everything cleaned up."
My heart squeezed a little, realizing they expected harm from me instead of kindness. I put the brush down and held my hands up, addressing the pixie still hovering close to Bee's shoulder.
"I would never do anything to any of you. That's not how we do things here in Honeysuckle, and I'm sorry if it's how you were treated before you arrived."
A tense silence followed my words until all three pixies burst into animated flight around my kitchen. I cringed, wondering what damage they might cause in their flurry of excitement, until they circled right above my head. Although I couldn't understand the exact words they spoke, the tone and musicality of what they said sounded like gratitude. Bee chortled.
"I'll make sure everything's cleaned up before you get up in the morning."
"And no more middle-of-the-night cooking fests, please,"
I begged with a yawn.
"If anyone's gonna burn down my house, let's do it in the daytime."
With a nod, I left the kitchen, muttering a wish under my breath that everything would be in decent shape come dawn. I trudged back upstairs and thought about asking Nana to come over and spellcast a fireproof protective charm over my entire house, just in case. When I got to my bed, I noticed a familiar furry lump curled up right in the middle of my pillow.
"Move it or lose it, Peachy Poo. I gotta get some sleep, or I'll be a walking zombie tomorrow. Or, I guess, later today."
She didn't even move an inch.
Exhausted, I clambered into bed and rolled onto my side,
accepting the minuscule little corner of the pillow left for me. As I closed my eyes, images of shattered pie plates and tiny flapping wings chased me into sleep. I woke up to my head boiling like a volcano about to blow, just what I needed to get sick on top of everything else I had to get done today. Raising my hand to check my forehead for a fever, I touched fur. I plucked my kitty from her position and plopped her on top of my chest, where she rewarded me with strong purrs. My finger stroked between her ears and under her chin, earning that closed-eye cat grin that always filled me with joy.
"What do you say, Peaches? Think it's safe to go down to the kitchen this morning?"
Placing her at the foot of the bed, I yawned and stretched with loud groans before making it out of bed. My spell phone still lay on top of the bedside table, and when I picked it up to check the time, I realized with a cringe I still hadn't recharged it. After last night's debacle and spotty sleep afterwards, my energy reserves were down to almost nothing, so trying to charge it enough myself wouldn't work. With an irritated sigh, I pulled out the cord from under my bed and plugged it in. The screen lit up, and I jotted down my duties for the day on a scrap piece of paper. It took extra effort to get showered and dressed due to my exhaustion. No amount of coffee would perk me up today. When I trudged my way downstairs and ventured into the kitchen, I found it cleaned up for the most part. One less thing to worry about, but the thought of fixing anything to eat exhausted me, even toast. Luckily, an easy solution to my laziness and hunger lived not too far away. As if sensing my newly hatched plan, Peaches zipped down the stairs and sat with her tail flicking in front of the door, almost tripping me as we left the house. I followed her off the porch and around the corner to where my special mode of transportation leaned against the house. My orange kitty waited with an impatient meow for me to lift her up and place her in the front basket of my bicycle. I flipped the switch to enable the spell to charge it, but no power zinged through it or me.
"Frosted fairy wings, this is not going to be my day,"
I groused, unsure if I could risk any of my own magic to power it. "Looks like I'll have to do this the old-fashioned way." I hopped off and walked the bike to the edge of the property and onto the nearby road. Straddling the saddle again, I pushed with my feet and pedaled under my own steam towards my grandmother's place. The trip that usually took 5 minutes with the magical boost took me closer to 15. Heck, Peaches could have gotten out and trotted faster than I rode. About the time Nana's house came into view, I heard a popping sound and the bike wobbled out of control.
"You have got to be kidding me."
Once I lurched to a stop, I got off the bike. Great, just what I needed, a flat tire. Could I fix it with a little magic? Maybe. Did I have any power reserves to deal with it? Not this morning. My cat turned her head far enough to give me a little kitty side eye, as if scolding me for not getting her all the way there. "Hold your horses, princess," I snorted. Grabbing onto the handlebars, I pushed the unwieldy bike all the way down the road and up to the edge of my grandmother's porch. Peaches hopped out without another glance my way the second Nana pushed her screen door open.
"Whoo, boy, what's got you in a tizzy this fine morning?"
she asked, watching my cat saunter right inside her house as if it belonged to her, too. I moaned and practically pouted.
"Don't get me started. Last night, my guest decided to destroy my kitchen, managing to wake me up in the process. I barely got any sleep after that.
Oh, and I forgot to charge my spell phone, so I'll have to work without it today." I kicked the flat front tire of my bike.
"And then this happened, just over yonder." "Sounds to me like you woke up with a case of the grumps,"
crowed Nana, crossing her arms.
"And what have I always told you about starting your day, birdie?"
No part of me wanted to play games. I debated whether or not eating some of her home cooking was worth it, or whether I should walk my crotchety behind all the way to the Harvest Moon Cafe instead. Imitating her stance, I frowned.
"What? That you gotta live the life you want every day. And I refuse to believe you want to spend the rest of today with a cloud hanging over your head and carting the heavy burden of doom and gloom everywhere you go."
She nodded once for emphasis.
"At least you're not crossing my threshold until you fix your attitude, birdie.
and it would be a shame for you to miss out on some ham biscuits, blueberry pancakes, eggs, and some crispy bacon. And maybe I should pour out that fresh pot of coffee I just brewed."
My stomach gurgled at the details of the prepared breakfast.
"All right, I give in."
I forced a smile on my lips.
"There, are you happy?" "The question is, are you happy? You possess the power to make or break your own day. Which way would you like it to go? Sour grapes or grape jelly?"
she cajoled. I slumped as I surrendered for real.
"Jelly, especially if you've got some I can slather on those biscuits."
Nana gestured for me to come up the porch stairs and into her house.
"Come on, then. It ain't getting any hotter sitting and waiting on you."
When I entered her kitchen, I marveled at the sheer amount of food waiting on the table and covering nearby counters.
"You look like you're ready to feed an army," I said, picking up a plate and piling all kinds of goodies on it. "Starving as I am, there's no way I can eat all this by myself."
"Who says it's all for you?"
my grandmother teased with a wink. A knock on the front door caused her to grin like the cat who ate the canary.
"Why don't you go see who that is?"
No telling who might be stopping by. As the town council member who held the high seat position, Nana was always in demand for someone's attention. But at this early time of the day, 9 times out of 10 it would be me or Matt. As soon as I saw the silhouette filling up the screen door, I celebrated that this was that one rare time and rushed to let the visitor in.
"Mason,"
I exhaled with relief, barely waiting for him to step inside before throwing my arms around him and burying my head on his shoulder.
"I've no idea how much I've needed you."
His broad frame shook as he chuckled.
"I didn't understand a word you just said."
Leaning my head back, I gazed up at him.
"You have no idea how much I needed you, especially this morning."
In the months after returning from Charleston, we both made great efforts to forge a new relationship. Although his full memory never came back, he didn't let his frustration stop him from courting me. In his words, he would rather enjoy the present than be pulled down by a past he couldn't recall. And I took full advantage of his unwavering support while my powers returned bit by bit until life ironed itself out. Mason's strong hold banished the frustrations of my morning. He squeezed me back and kissed the top of my head. Standing on my tiptoes, I planted my lips against his and reveled in the warmth that grew from our more intimate embrace. Nana cleared her throat.
"Detective, I believe you take your coffee with a little cream."
I snickered at her formality. She only called him by his warden position whenever she thought our PDA was a little too unseemly. Mason's muscles stiffened at being caught, and he finished our kiss with a slight peck and stepped back from me.
"Yes, ma'am."
"We'll join you in a minute, Nana,"
I insisted, willing her with wide eyes to give my boyfriend and me one more moment just between us. My grandmother clicked her tongue.
"Mm-hmm."
Once she left us alone, I playfully pushed Mason.
"I can't believe you. I thought you were going to stand at attention and actually salute her."
He rubbed the back of his neck.
"I don't know what happened, but for a second there, I felt like a naughty kid caught with his hand in the cookie jar."
Closing the distance between us, Mason kissed the top of my head, the tip of my nose, and pressed his mouth against mine again. The front screen door slammed shut.
"Hey, hands off my sister, mister," Matt barked.
Mason ignored my brother's edict, placing his hand on the back of my neck and pulling me closer. It revved my engines whenever the rule-abiding warden rebelled a little. Bonus points for it grossing out Matt to boot. Just to needle my brother even more, I groaned for good measure.
"Leave them alone. You and I did far worse when we were dating,"
my sister-in-law teased through the screen while she still stood on the porch.
"And how about you stop bothering them and come to open the door so your wife, who is carrying your daughter, can come inside?"
The kiss ended in giggles, and I leaned far enough to see my brother shamed into helping his family.
"Thanks for the solidarity, TJ," I called out with a wave.
She shot my brother an exasperated glance as she entered and handed him my niece before giving Mason and me quick hugs. Don't let him give you too much heck. Now, I'm gonna go stuff my face before heading into work. If y'all don't get your behinds in there soon, I can't promise I'm gonna leave you anything. Matt glowered at me as he followed his wife.
You better be right behind me, Birdie. And, detective, when you're in my family home, rank doesn't matter.
Well, his words sounded like a threat. The effort he made not to snort into laughter relaxed me. I swatted my brother's backside.
You better get.
Don't do that,
he complained with a mock frown. I stuck out my tongue once.
Make me,
I teased. My niece squealed in delight at our playful banter and pointed a spit-covered finger at me.
That's right, sweetie. Your aunt is being a big old brat.
Matt bounced his daughter up and down, encouraging her bubbles of adorable tittering.
Nope. I'm teaching Junior how to be a strong woman who stands up for herself, I countered.
Matt scoffed and held his daughter out for me to take.
Here, if you're so big on teaching her, you take her. And while she's in your arms, no PDA. I definitely don't want her learning that until she's like, what, 30? 40?
He skedaddled toward the kitchen with a snicker.
And her name is Raylene, or Sunshine, not Junior,
he shouted as he disappeared. Mason reached up to stroke my niece's plump little cheeks.
She is a cutie pie.
I snuggled her into me, taking a long whiff of that fresh baby scent at the top of her head.
Yes, she is, but my brother is one big bucket of water, although I did like watching you stand up to him.
He doesn't scare me. Your grandmother, on the other hand.
He trailed off.
You ain't the first, and you surely won't be the last, to tremble in her presence,
I joked. Now, give me one last kiss before we go stuff our faces. Obeying, Mason leaned his face closer to mine, but my niece blew spit bubbles at him and placed her hand over his mouth, stopping him from achieving his goal. Instead of kissing me, he planted one on top of her delicate fingers. I rolled my eyes and spoke directly to the baby.
You are definitely your father's daughter.
Too hungry to delay any longer, I gave up trying to have a private moment with Mason and made my way to the kitchen. By the time I reached the room full of love, laughter, and good food, I'd forgotten all about my morning woes. Pecking the top of Raylene's head, I took Nana's advice to heart and chose to live the rest of the day in the joy of this very moment. Chapter 2. Following right behind everyone else, I moseyed out the front door and onto the porch. My bad mood had evaporated like the steam coming off of my plate full of buttermilk biscuits with slices of country ham and jelly. I couldn't turn down stacks of fluffy blueberry pancakes smothered in butter and drowned in maple syrup. I barely had room for crunchy hash browns with scrambled eggs on top, and one of Nana's gigantic cinnamon rolls with an obscene amount of frosting dripping off the sides. Somehow, I rose to the occasion and gobbled it all up. Sunlight dappled through the trees, and I grinned at the bright day ahead of me as I patted my engorged tummy and finished the last couple bites of the pieces of bacon I'd stolen from my brother's plate.
Now, that's what I like to see. Detective Claremont, don't you think my granddaughter looks so much prettier with a smile on her face instead of a frown?
Nana teased, holding Raylene while she saw us out. Mason draped an arm over my shoulder.
I think she looks pretty no matter what.
He pressed his lips onto the top of my head while heat rose in my cheeks.
Good answer,
my grandmother declared with a wink to me. My niece agreed with a throaty baby giggle. Matt cleared his throat in agitation at the detective's public display of affection for me.
I should be heading to the station. We might as well go together, don't you think, detective?
He raised his eyebrows at Mason. I shot my brother a glare of death, but before I could mutter a single word of sass, TJ jumped to my defense.
Don't go ruining a perfectly fine start to the day. Leave your sister and her boyfriend alone. Plus, you promised to come help me muck stalls and feed the horses.
My brother groaned and rolled his eyes for dramatic effect.
Fine, but I'm not dealing with the unicorn.
You got something against sparkles?
I asked. Matt had to be crazy if he didn't like the adorable mythical beastie. He scrunched up his nose.
I like her just fine, but each and every time I get around her, you know what she does. And this is my only clean uniform, so if she farts rainbow glitter all over me, I'll have absolutely nothing to wear to work.
Raylene squealed and clapped her hands, and we all broke into laughter with her. Nana kissed her great-granddaughter's forehead.
You forgetting that you're a witch? Why don't you just spellcast a protection shield over your clothes?
Matt's jaw dropped.
I swear, it never occurred to me.
With a shake of his head, he escorted his wife to their car.
Man, that's a lot of laundry I didn't need to do. Nana, TJ will be back to pick up Raylene after lunch. Detective, I'll be seeing you at the station soon enough.
He scooted around the front of his car to the driver's side.
Bertie, I'll see you tonight at the town potluck.
My brother's farewell wrinkled my improved state of mind. In all of the chaos, I'd plumb forgotten about the welcome potluck at the park. Well, frosted fairy wings with a side of unicorn manure. How was I ever going to get everything on today's list done and cook something? If the chess pie you'd made hadn't been destroyed, I could have brought that, I moaned.
Don't worry, Mason assured me. David wanted to help me make lasagna. I can check and see if he can pick up the ingredients to make two instead.
I'd forgotten about the former bellboy from Charleston, who was in the first wave of newcomers to Honeysuckle. True to his word, Mason had offered to let the half-dryad room at his house for the time being.
Why, that's mighty generous of you,
Nana declared with admiration while she rocked my niece back and forth.
You keep treating Bertie this good, and you won't be able to get rid of her.
Prickly heat scorched my cheeks, and I shot daggers at my grandmother for making such a pointed statement. I appreciate the offer, but since I'm on the welcoming committee, it wouldn't look right for me not to bring something on my own. While Mason had lived here long enough not to be quite the outsider he used to be, he still didn't get the importance of everyone contributing for themselves. With relief, I came up with an easy solution and snapped my fingers. I know, I'll bake up a few batches of cornbread.
You need any extra skillets?
Nana asked.
I can send over one or two of mine.
I rushed up the porch stairs to give my grandmother a proper goodbye. No, I can use the ones I've already got. Kissing her on the cheek, I also kissed my niece on top of her head, careful not to mess up her soft, wispy hair. Be good to her. Nana clicked her tongue at me.
I'm always good to our little ray of sunshine.
I was talking to Junior, I joked over my shoulder as I fetched my bike. I'll see you both tonight. The screen door slammed shut behind Nana as she took my niece inside. Full from breakfast, I worked for a couple of seconds to fix the tire and inflate it again, good as new, with my rejuvenated energy. Mason pulled his keys from his pocket.
I would have offered to drive you to your first appointment, but it looks like you don't need the help anymore.
Holding on to the handlebars of the bike, I leaned in far enough to peck his stubbled cheek. It wouldn't make sense for you to go out of your way, but I do appreciate the sentiment. He brushed his hand down my arm.
I don't suppose you have any free time today? There's something I've been meaning to ask you, and I'd rather do it when we can have a moment to ourselves.
My brow wrinkled as I listed off everything I had going on today. I've got a meeting with Twinkle about a plumbing issue at Sweet Tooth's, an appointment with a potential renter for the old hardware store space, a lunch meeting with the welcoming committee, and I'm supposed to have coffee with Clementine after, and... Mason chuckled and placed a gentle finger over my lips.
Okay, so your day's pretty full. Guess I'll have to wait until tonight after the potluck to grab a moment with you all to myself.
He moved his hand to cup my chin.
Or maybe I need to make an appointment, too.
A little regret seeped into my heart.
Ah, no, we've both been so preoccupied trying to help others that I know I've forgotten to make us a priority.
But it's that big heart of yours that makes you the person I want to be with.
He admitted in a low whisper. I placed my palm on his chest, over his heart.
Same here, detective.
While the sun rose higher in the sky, birds twittered their good mornings, and the Spanish moss rustled in the wind, we stole a romantic moment just for us. With reluctance, we let each other go. Mason kissed the tip of my nose.
I actually should be getting to the station. No need to give Big Willie anything to complain about before the day is barely started.
A smart man would stop by the Harvest Cafe to get one of Sassy's fresh-baked pies for him, just to make sure he doesn't jump on your case, I suggested, straddling my bike. A wide grin spread on Mason's face.
Add that to the list of reasons I love...
Sample complete. Ready to continue?